What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Repack, where we recap the recent Packers game. I'm Justice Mosqueda. I'm here with Tex Western. Say what's up to the people, Tex.
What's up, everybody? Hope you're feeling good on a Monday morning. Hope your Monday morning's going better than your Sunday afternoon did. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that was a toughie. Sucks to suck, right?
Yeah, that was a brutal game today. Just brutal.
And I think the biggest thing is, like, you could just feel it slipping away, like, real early. And then it's just watching a horror movie.
Yeah. Obviously, 38-3 Saints over the Packers. Man, it was a complete mess on both sides of the football. I think we'll talk about a couple of games that it reminded us of in a little bit, but we've seen this from LaFleur teams, though, right? When they lose big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do, I mean, and when they do lose and they lose big, it's always against downhill run teams, man. And yeah. That's the part that sucks, is just consistently seeing the same type of team whoop your ass. I will say this defense is a whole lot different than Mike Pettine, and they lost in the run game for a lot of different reasons that were not the typical Mike Pettine reasons. So I know a lot of people will be like, Barry, oh, he sucks, it's just Pettine all over again. But I think this had to do more with, like, offensive or the defensive line play than alignment, which is like alignment and personnel. Like, hey, maybe let's not walk up Za'Darius Smith over the center when they're running trap, or let's not have Amos there in dime at linebacker and just get ran downhill on. They weren't doing any of that. They went dime one play this game. I think Henry Black, the third safety, the only other safety who was active, didn't even get in the game defensively. Maybe I'm wrong there, but that's what I saw. So in general, like, what were your takeaways from this game?
Ultimately, the Packers just got beaten up in the trenches on both sides of the football. The D-line just looked like they were being put on skates the entire first half, especially those two long touchdown drives. And when, you know, it seemed like they just could not hold the point of attack at all. And that's a bad news against, to your point, a downhill running team.
Yeah, and that, it really, I mean, if you ask me what is the big takeaway here, it's that we learned that the Packers' defensive line cannot handle these type of guys. And part of the problem, too, I was talking with Seth Galina from Pro Football Focus on this for the Friday preview pod, and their interior offensive line is, like, their weakest part of their offensive line, you know? Like, yep. they're known as a good offensive line, but it's because they have great tackles and they have solid interior players. So those interior guys driving literally every defensive tackle that the Packers had off the ball, you know, a couple yards, was tough. I mean, even Kenny Clark had a couple of those where he was taken off the ball. And I mean, that at some point that's a talent thing. And that stresses me out moving forward in the season. Cause, like, they were playing base defense, you know, in terms of personnel. Like, they had three defensive tackles out there, and they all had them inside of the offensive tackles. Like, in theory, you should not be able to run against these guys. Like, on paper, if you try to draw it up, the lines wouldn't work. But the difference is their guys are moving your guys. And at that point, it's tough. And I know a lot of people will come out with the hot – it's an easy take to send out there that it's, you know, hey, maybe they should have played in the preseason. Well, all of those interior defensive line guys, other than Kenny Clark, were getting preseason time. So yep. What more did you want them to do?
Yeah, it's, man, you saw, like, to your point, there was a lot of base defense, and that's kind of what Joe Barry promised us all summer and all offseason, right? They were going to play a little bigger than they did under Pettine when he was in dime, what, 60% of the time or something like that. So yeah, I mean, it on that side of the ball, it certainly seems like it just boils down to execution as much as anything. And I mean, a couple of issues of not containing the edge, but that wasn't the biggest issue. It was the downhill stuff. It was the, you know, the tackles being, you know, being moved 4 or 5 yards down the field on every play.
Yeah. And I think one of the big issues when you do give up those inside runs too, is the other team can now control the clock, right? Cause they can just chip away. They can just chip away. And that's how you get back-to-back 15-play scoring drives. The first time that's happened since 2000. Just absurd. I mean, there was a point like right before the two-minute drill. I think it was like actually like a one-minute drill.
Yep.
Where the Saints had like four times as much like time of possession as the Packers.
Yeah.
And at that point, I know people get mad and they're like, well, why don't you run the ball more? When a team is holding the ball like that, you can't run the ball. Because if you start running the ball, you're not just fighting. Your football games aren't just I beat this team. It's I got a score ahead of this team by the time the clock ended. The clock is still very much in play even early on in games. So when you're down 17-0, it's a wrap for the run game that early when they're holding the ball like that.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, and at that point, I thought there was still, you know, there's still a chance. It's 17 to nothing with a minute left. If the Packers go down and get a score, whether that's 3 or 7, and then they're getting the ball coming out of halftime, if they can find a way to double up, then you're right back in it, regardless of, you know, if you get 10, if you get 7, you know, 14, then you're right back in a competitive game. And they at least got the score at the end of the half to get those 3 points. But just, yeah, game situation then coming out of the second half and turning the ball over after a, you know, finally a decent sustained drive to start the third quarter. That felt like the backbreaker, man. Keeping it 17-3, having a chance to go down by one score and then flipping the field with that first pick. That was what did it for me. That was when I knew, I knew it was over.
I think LaFleur and Rodgers, based off of their post-game comments, said the same thing. They're like, that's a different game if we don't throw that pick, you know, in the red zone. And I think they have a point. Yeah.
Well, and what that pick I want to touch on briefly, because, I mean, Rodgers has pass rush in his face. He's got to get rid of that ball quickly. But it looked, I mean, he threw it way behind Adams on that crossing route. If he throws it to the sideline, that's not a bad play, right? Like, I mean,
I don't think it was a bad decision. It was a bad ball.
I think it was just a bad
throw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's where I landed on that too. Not like the second pick.
The second one was just like, hey man, we gotta make a play at some point.
Yeah. I mean, it was a YOLO ball and you get it. And he's done some of those before where, you know, backed up against his own goal line. And, you know, he's converted those to MVS and to Adams last year. We saw a couple of those, but yeah, it was that first one where that was a little bit like the, you know, one of the picks against Tampa, I feel like in the NFC Championship, right? It just completely deflated the team entirely. I'm not a big momentum guy, but you know, if you're into that, that was the momentum shift, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, I think everyone can at least understand, like, situations change, right? So, like, Green Bay. So, one of the big issues I have is it seems like people are worried about the offense. I understand Aaron Rodgers played very poorly today. Not really worried about the offense at all. I don't, how do you feel about that?
The only thing I'm worried about is what we kind of knew we should be worried about coming in, which was kind of the interior of the offensive line. Because it certainly seemed like there were some moments when they really struggled against a defensive line that outside of Cam Jordan and, you know, depending on what you think of Marcus Davenport, interior, they didn't really have anybody at defensive tackle. And
all their guys are hurt. Yeah,
everybody's hurt or suspended or, yep. Yeah. So, I mean, again, they had Christian Ringo listed as a starter. I'll be curious to see if he actually started and what his playing time was. But like Christian Ringo, who hasn't played football in 3 years, was playing significant snaps on the interior. That's not a guy that you should be, you know, losing battles to on the inside. There was one play. I mean, Cam Jordan gave Royce Newman his welcome to the NFL moment. I think that was that on the pick. man, there's a couple plays where, you know, Newman really seemed to struggle, and just the interior of the line in general. But outside of that, I'm with you. The running backs never had a chance to get anything going. The receivers didn't really have much of an opportunity to do anything. Certainly not after the catch. So I don't think we can, because of game situation and how everything went. I mean, LaFleur said he didn't even really get into the game plan at all in the first half because they only had 12 snaps before that last minute drive. So yeah, I don't know.
And that's the toughest thing. That's the toughest thing. When they were legitimately still in a position where they were trying to gather information about how the defense lines up to their formations, and they were already down 17-0. That sucks. And that's why I think this game is, the flow of the game was so weird in that New Orleans could hold the ball and they were scoring at will, basically. That I don't think this necessarily translates for the offense in terms of like something we should worry about. Defensively, I don't even know what you do because you're already playing heavy on the defensive line. So like, what, you get Kenny Clark more motivated? I don't know how realistic that is. Like,
yeah, schematically, what do you do to fix that? To your point, you're already playing mostly base. So,
and they're stacking all three of those defensive tackles in the interior. Like, you have both true linebackers out there. What else can you do? You're not going to get a linebacker who can move, who's bigger than Devondre Campbell at this point. You know, I don't know what the defensive tackle market looks like on September 12th. So it's a tough one. Oh. And, you know, Detroit, they got a lot of garbage time scores in, frankly, against San Francisco today. But they very much seem like they're committed to inside run game. And that'll be very interesting because I think their first 250 yards of the game today, 240 of them came from two running backs and TJ Hockenson. So I feel like we kind of know what we're getting with Detroit next week, which is they're not really going to try to pass to their wide receivers. And okay.
Why should they?
it's a fair point, but you know, Detroit's offensive line probably isn't what New Orleans is. But I don't think it's bad by any means. I know Penei Sewell got some left tackle reps after struggling at right tackle for most of the preseason, and he looked solid apparently. So I don't know. My anxiety, I went from a 0 out of 10 for the Lions anxiety game to like, I'm like a 2 out of 10 now on like the off chance that you can stop Aaron Rodgers long enough to be able to hold the ball and run downhill. Kind of worries me just the slightest.
Yeah. That's going to be interesting, but I mean, You mentioned there's some games that come to mind here that were similar to this. The first Tampa game last year, the regular season one, maybe a little bit, but that one was that wasn't the kind of power running, hold the ball style from Tampa. But maybe the Chargers game in 2019. I think you mentioned that a couple of the players alluded to that one as sort of a similar situation where, you know, they didn't really get a chance to get their offense going at all in that first half of that game, if I remember right.
Yeah, it's just there isn't an offense. Like, there isn't a blueprint. Once you're down 17, the other team just basically gets to hold the ball for however long they want to hold it, and you can't stop the run game. Like, there just isn't anything you can do. I mean, frankly, this game felt over by like midway through the second. I know there was an opportunity at the end to try to like double up coming out of halftime, but even then, man, that's it's a tough ask to even do that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that was to be down one score. You got to do everything perfect on those two drives just to be down one score. So, one of the more interesting things I thought was, so Rashawn Gary and Preston Smith started because Za'Darius Smith, it seemed like early on in the game, they were keeping his reps limited to like pass rushing situations. So like, third and six plus, I would say. Yep. They started bringing him out, and Za'Darius wasn't even playing like true outside linebacker. Like, he was lining up on the interior a lot, which one, he does a lot, and he did a lot under Penton. And then two, they didn't show with any other linebacker, and they didn't show in the preseason at all. So I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. When Rashawn Gary gave up a long run to Jameis Winston from Jameis Winston on, I believe it was third down. Yep. He actually got like half decent pressure and then let Jameis run around him, lost contain, and then you saw Rashawn Gary's snaps start dropping drastically. And the weird thing about that is Za'Darius apparently got healthy because he started coming in the game. And then, like, Jonathan Garvin, like, damn near matched Rashawn Gary's snaps, I would guess. And I was not expecting that. On top of that, you know, Chauncey Rivers was active for the game. So they played five outside linebackers, which I didn't see the need for that. But, like, I get it with Za'Darius hurt.
Yeah, I did not expect to see 47 on the field on defense at all.
He got in the first drive. They double swapped outside linebackers, and he got in the first drive because they were so gassed because they couldn't stop the damn run. 15 play drives.
I was going to say it's. I wonder how much certainly the game situation played into it with these extended drives, and I wonder if just the heat and the conditions in Jacksonville may have played into that a little bit too, that they were trying to get guys in and out of the lineup a little bit more just to try to keep them a little fresher given the heat and humidity down in Jacksonville. That's the only other thing I can think of with those guys, because I don't know what they really give you other than, you know, fresh bodies out there for, you know, the occasional snap here.
Yeah. They weren't really making plays, and neither was the defensive line, to be fair. I thought Preston actually did pretty well. Gary, obviously, his calling card is the bull rush. Like, he can bull rush with the best of them, and he can't do that much outside of that. One guy who stood out, he got one snap. Already talked about him. Eric Stokes came in, one snap, got a PBU, hit the bench again. So, I don't know, man. Kevin got lit up, I'll tell you that. I mean, they found his way. They weren't throwing much, but when they threw touchdowns. How many passes did Jameis have? I wouldn't be surprised if it was under 20, even though
it was 20 attempts exactly.
Yeah. See, man. Yeah. That's not good. And the explosives were on Kevin.
Here in Ohio, we got the end of the awful Cincinnati Minnesota game. So I had to wait for that game to finish up in overtime before it switched over to Green Bay, New Orleans. And the first play that was on when they finally switched back over is Kevin King dropping about 20 yards into his drop. And I think Deontay Harris ran like a little comeback to the sideline for, you know, like a nice 12 or 13 yard gain or something. I'm like, well, here we go again.
Yep, it's not great. It is interesting that in that dime look that Stokes got in, Jair was playing in the slot, and Stokes and Kevin were both playing outside. So I do kind of think that they didn't activate Shamar John Charles, right? Yep. So that means they don't have a backup slot on the roster technically. If you're thinking about like outside corner, inside corner. And then with the fact that they only have three safeties right now because Vernon Scott is still hurt, that makes me kind of think that, you know, if Chanda never did go down, I think Jair is probably going to the slot in nickel, and then Stokes is coming off the bench outside.
Yeah, that's got to be it. I mean, that's the only other option that you've got with John Charles inactive, I think. So that makes sense. But maybe there's a reason to go to that a little bit in the normal rotation. I mean, you know, you got with Jair, you know, he can play inside or outside. He can lock up regardless of where you put him. So, but then again, that still leaves Kevin King on the field.
And yeah.
I just wonder how long it's going to be before we do see Stokes really start to eat into his playing time, because if today was any indication, it should be very quick. Now, again, next week, Detroit, you kind of alluded to it, and they don't really have much of a receiving core, at least on the outside.
At all. I mean, you're understating it. You're being nice. Yeah.
I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt, but that might be the, you know, I think I heard you joking with Seth on Friday that the Saints might have the worst receiving core in the NFL. But the one red flag that came up with my mind there is, well, Detroit still exists. So, I mean, yeah, it's Amon-Ra St. Brown and Quintus Cephas, and yeah, that's about it. So I can understand why they're funneling their entire offense through Hockenson and the running backs.
Khalif Raymond was their top like wide receiver, and Jamal Williams, Swift, and Hockenson all had more yards and receptions than him.
Yeah,
so that's not great.
No.
Yeah, and they got like Tyrell Williams. Like, it's all like, oh, that's where that guy is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of those guys. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, geez. So that, I mean, next week will be interesting. I mean, if there were two guys I would want to get longer looks at during practice this week, would definitely be Heflin, because he wasn't active either. And then Stokes. Like, how sure are we that they shouldn't be on the field? Because those are the two that I think could probably contribute the most if they can give you snaps. Because, like, Lancaster right now isn't giving you anything. Lowry isn't giving you anything. They can't get off a block. They can't rush the passer. Slate is very green right now.
I'm still a little stunned that they kept Lancaster after basically him being injured through the entire preseason. And what does he really give you at this
point? So he's a nose tackle body. They did some interesting stuff, when the game wasn't out of hand, where they would put Kenny Clark as a defensive end, but positionally defensive end, but where he lined up was three tech, which is penetrating defensive tackle. It's on the outside shoulder of the guard. So he was basically kicked out, and then Lancaster would play nose tackle. So it allows Kenny Clark to be in a more penetrating position, which I think serves him better, frankly. Sure. But I don't see why Heflin couldn't play that either. Mm-hmm. You know, Lowry's kind of thin for how long he is to kind of be doing that, but Slayton could be doing that. I think Heflin could be doing that. So I don't know. I'm not sure Lancaster is now 18-week guy on this roster if they can get a look at some of these young guys. And they did pull starters at the end of midway through the fourth quarter, and you got to see Jordan Love. So it's not like they're not trying to get reps or looks at these guys.
No, I thought that was a little interesting too, that you got Love finally getting his first action. And honestly, yeah, there were a couple of decent throws in there, I thought. He comes in really.
You always got to be worried about how serious teams are taking that too. I remember, also fair. What was it, Hundley against the Vikings?
Yeah,
where it was Rodgers got hurt, but the game was done already. So Hundley came in, he made a couple throws, and then he started starting games, and teams started playing him a little different.
Yeah, that brings up some bad memories of a really ugly blowout that I saw that Hundley game when the Packers played against Baltimore. I think it was 20-0 shutout loss at home at Lambeau. My brother and I went up for that game, and it was not pleasant. One of the ugliest games in recent memory up until today, I think.
I still think the top one is the Arizona game. Losing to Josh Rosen like that. Let's not lose perspective. It was Josh Rosen, the guy that everyone hated at some point. He's bouncing around rosters, and Arizona didn't like him enough to just be we're done with you after 1 year. And that's the guy that beat McCarthy.
Fun fact, Josh Rosen got in on two snaps today for the Falcons in garbage time of their
I saw that.
They're getting the Eagles.
Crap beaten out of them, man. Cool. Embarrassing.
That's a bad team, too.
So nice. Bad. And they could have taken a quarterback, and they didn't, because they thought that they were going to just keep this going. No rebuild. And then Julio's you got to be kidding me. I'm out.
Yeah.
And you just paid Dante Fowler how much? No, I'm gone.
And instead, Justin Fields ends up in Chicago because, of course.
God, just so many bad decisions. They said in the presser, updates tomorrow on DeGuara, who got a concussion, and then Darnell Savage, who had a shoulder injury. By the way, Darnell Savage, hell of an interception that got called back for no good reason.
Yes. Oh, my God. I was hoping you were going to bring that up, because that hit by Zadarius – that's a textbook.
It was clean.
This is the textbook. This is how we want you to hit in the NFL these days. There was no contact to the head. There was, no body weight landing on the quarterback. I can't for the life of me understand what the referee saw there that led him to throw the flag, other than the fact that it was just a big hit on the quarterback. It wasn't late.
I think that's literally it.
Egregious. Gosh, that killed me. And again, the game was over at that point for all intents and purposes. I get it. But yeah, you rob Savage of a great pick. And it just, that just felt like the cherry on top of the crap sandwich that we had to watch in this game.
It was nice for a Packer to get a pressure too. I mean,
that's a good point.
There weren't too many of those.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if that goes down as a, I'll have to look at the stat sheet tomorrow morning and see if that actually goes down as a play of record. Or if the,
I think
the
they go no play there, right? Away.
I think you're right. So he's not even going to get credit for the quarterback hit on that. I
just
think
they wiped so dumb entirely. The no play stats counting. And then, well, within context, right? Like,
yeah.
If you're mugging a wide receiver, you get an interception as DPI. That shouldn't count.
Right.
But like that, and then also, for whatever reason, people not including playoff games in the stats is like very weird to me. Because they are in theory the most important games, and if nothing else, at the bare minimum, they were a game that was played, which seems fair to count. My buddy Sam Schwartzstein, who worked with me at the XFL, texted Dean Blandino about that play. And what Dean said was, it's not a foul. And that was the only thing that he said.
All right, there you go. End of story. Oh, yeah. Man.
That was an ugly one. Like you said, I think that was just a, hey, you hit the quarterback hard flag, where, you know, a lot of people complain about, like, you don't want people to touch quarterbacks, and it's, like, actually a player safety thing. This one felt like it was actually a, you just don't want people to touch quarterbacks.
Yeah. Well, if it was Buck or Aikman, even made a mention on the broadcast of Winston popped right back up when he saw that it was a pick, and, you know, was looking to try to make the tackle. He was not looking to sell a call. I think even he knew that it was a clean hit, and
there and was, it was no like a late flag too, right?
Yeah,
wasn't it late? Yeah,
a little bit. So as always, there's an officiating problem in the NFL, and I don't know how you fix that.
You got to put the home addresses on the back of the uniforms. I've been telling the league for years, and they don't believe me. Watch how actions change if that happens. Yep. But do we got anything else? Anything else you wanted to touch on? I thought it was kind of interesting. Like AJ Dillon got in when they were trying to like actually run the ball and get their offense back started, but I mean, it lasted like three plays. So
yeah, I don't know how much you can take from that.
Tanya not playing so much.
Yeah, that was interesting.
He was playing like a third of the snaps when they were like not in their hurry up offense, and then obviously he had to come out on the field.
Yeah, DeGuara was getting some run, I think, early on when they were trying to set up the run a little bit. So maybe that's the angle they want to go with Mercedes on the line, and DeGuara is more of that kind of, you know, fullback, H-back type of guy. That's the only thing I can think of there. The only other thing that you kind of mentioned it earlier with Gary missing contain on Winston, but it seemed like early on in the game, there were a bunch of scrambles for him. That was it just like, was there some pass rush lane integrity that was just being missed all over the place? Because there's no reason Jameis Winston should be killing you with his legs. At least I wouldn't think.
Part of the issue too, right, is, if you are going to play base, right, and you're going to send four-man pressure, so you're not taking anyone out of the coverage, that means that one of your outside linebackers has to drop into coverage because you're not dropping a defensive tackle. So your pass rush then becomes three D tackles and an outside linebacker, and one of those D tackles, whichever way you're slanting to, you know, the dropping outside linebacker, that guy now has to play contain. So I wouldn't be surprised if you know, on the all 22 or something, you end up looking and you're like, oh yeah, Dean Lowry lost the foot race to Jameis Winston. And that might have been something that happened, but both of those tackles are very good. Again, this isn't something that you're necessarily going to get every week, but I do think there are a few opportunities on the schedule for a team to run inside. It's not really, don't think of it as running. Think of it specifically as running inside, because Minnesota and the Rams are very different from like Baltimore, what Detroit wants to do, what Cleveland can do, what San Francisco can do, right? Yep. So those are the big ones to me that I'm like, highlight this, because this one, in terms of like styles make fights, not necessarily they're a better team overall, but styles makes fights just interesting games to note, where Green Bay might end up in the same situation.
Yeah, just ultimately all about those matchups stylistically and what they kind of want to do and what they're, you know, what their skill sets allow them to do better from a schematic perspective. I gotcha. Yeah. And then the only other thing, man, third downs, 1 of 10 for the Packers on third down, 5 of 10 New Orleans. I mean, money down. That's going to kill you.
Yeah.
So they were so good on third down last year, all year long. And no surprise, they go 1 of 10 and they get blown out.
That's all. Not great. Sucks to suck. The only good news is that everyone in the NFC North is probably going to go 0-1. The Bears are playing right now, but.
Yeah. They're down 2 touchdowns, start of the fourth quarter. They're going to be done. Minnesota did not look good in Cincinnati.
They have to come back to even push that into OT, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cincy, they put up some points early. Jamar Chase remembered how to catch a football, so that was nice for him. But yeah, I think they came back with like 10 points in the fourth quarter to push that to overtime. And then, you know, Detroit going down big early, and same thing there, trying to claw their way back in some garbage time. But yeah, so the rest of the division at least looks like what we expected them to be. So division is still very much in sight. So we got that going for us, which is nice.
Yep. All right, guys. Keep listening. Keep checking in on Acme Packing Company. Leave a review, a nice review, 5 stars, please. It helps us with the algorithms, I've been told. Tex, do you want to plug anything that you're working on recently?
We'll start, obviously, now that we're into games and the regular season, we'll be doing our usual game stuff. So keep an eye out. We'll have snap counts up tomorrow morning, probably right around the time that you get this into your feed, hopefully for your morning commute. Just the usual stuff. Keep it here. Keep it in the feed. And we'll see you around the internets.